Hey everyone, thanks for checking this out. Today's episode is brought to you by Action. So if you guys drink coffee and you haven't yet tried one of Action's three signature roasts, including their incredibly smooth medium roast called Ambitious, then you need to go to drinkaction.com right now and use the code word curious, and you'll save 15% off your first order, and you'll also get free shipping. Yeah, that's 15% off and free shipping by entering your code word curious at checkout. And that's Action with a K, A-K-T-I-O-N. Kind of cool. Action, fuel for life. Check it out. Today's guest is an up-and-coming documentary filmmaker. He's someone that I met a couple of years ago who did some content creation for me and my brother, and I've stayed in touch with him ever since. He recently made a trip around the United States, driving through all 48 of the contiguous United States with his filmmaking partner and girlfriend. And he wanted to tell me a little bit about that trip and some other fun stuff. It was a great time, and I really enjoyed talking with him. Please give it up for Matt Meredith. What drives the desire to want to drive across the country, and you know, what challenges leading up to that did you face?
Yeah, good, great question. First of all, thank you for having me as your first guest, man. I appreciate it. I hope you have an interesting guest lined up, right?
Yeah, it only felt right. So,
oh, I appreciate it. But so, where do you? You begin with a road trip where you go to all 48 of the contiguous United States, which, by the way, we kept saying incorrectly at first. We kept saying the continental United States, which is not true because technically Alaska is a part of the continental United States. Anyways, somebody corrected us on that. But so my girlfriend, Leia, we've been dating for a little over 4 years now. But at the time, she had just graduated from Chapman University, or she was leading up to graduating. And she's a documentary film major there. And so she was in the middle of like finishing and polishing and premiering her documentary thesis film. So we were getting a lot of hands-on experience, she much more than I. But like, you know, I was a cinematographer on a couple sets and helped her with some of the transcribing, and I got to even like edit some of the sound design for her film. So there was just like some cool experiences that got me thirsty and like definitely fed like a hunger for Leia as well to like, or like, excuse me, like fed a, like created a desire to really like, you know, dive head over heels into documentary filmmaking. And so one, she was graduating. We're like, how can we have like a really great time? You know, like how can we celebrate it? We love traveling. You know, we had gone to Europe together before, or she went abroad, but I like visited her for about a month and we did a lot of fun traveling through Europe. So we're like, where can we go? You know, and we're like, well, you know, we've discovered all these places, and her film was actually a very reflexive film, the thesis film. And it was all about discovering her roots in the Philippines. And so she had gone to the Philippines in like January before we left on this road trip. And we left in like June. And so her getting like, oh, I understand like where I come from a lot better now, having gone to the Philippines, but like, we don't really understand what it's like to be Americans. Like truly, you know, like sure, we've grown up here and we know what it's like to like live in Agoura Hills for me. And she knows what it's like to like live in the Canoga Park area in Winnetka. And like, maybe we understand our college towns to a certain extent, but like, you don't really know it much more beyond that. And what you might hear on the news and what you think you learn, like, or what you remember from like school, from the history books, but like, you don't really know the United States, just like how you don't really know other countries. And like what we were talking about before off camera, like, you don't know places until you go there and experience it yourself. But then even then, right, like, it's a very like specific experience to you. It's not necessarily what to say it's like to go to that country for everyone. So it's like, to experience the US, you got to go there. So we wanted to be like, okay, first let's do a road trip in the US. And like, we want to go to New York. That's pretty crazy, right? And so, okay, we'll go to New York. And then when we started doing out the map, it was like, you know, going to take 2 months, and we were going to go to North Carolina first because my family was doing a reunion there, and then go up to New York. And we're like, well, if we do that, we're going to hit like 18 states already or something. And so we thought, well, shit, you know, this is turning into like, you know, maybe 20 something states. Like, why don't we just like, are we ever going to go to those little states that like you don't even know the name of when you do your math or your map test, you know? And so it's like, let's just go to all of them. And so we went to all of the states that we could that were within reason. You know, some places we didn't show as much love to other, you know, Alabama, we only had a breakfast in like Bridgeport. But for the most part, we got a nice authentic experience of at least the town that we got to visit.
I'd be curious, like how many people have really ever driven to all 50 states? I mean, I'm sure over the course of human history, there's been a handful, but.
That's we talked about that actually. Because I think, and I totally got off track with the answering your question, but
no, you're fine. No. This is good.
But we definitely talked about that, and I estimated that like there's got to be, like, you know, thousands for sure of people that
like have all in one, because, all in one set though. You think?
Yeah, because there's like one a huge market for like cross country RV traveling.
True.
It's a huge thing, especially if you're like visiting the United States. It's like, oh, the challenge to road trip. Like if you're a road tripper, it's like it's a great challenge, you know, but it's actually pretty doable if you like stay within a budget and plan it out and are strategic in how you do it. So it can be reasonable. But I think thousands of people for sure, like maybe 10 or tens. But like 10,000 people, tens of thousands would probably be on like the pretty high end.
So with your company, so it's Unreal Stories, right? This is the name That's of the. Right. So do you have a specific genre of documentary that you're looking to focus on, or are you really kind of just whatever speaks to you guys is what you guys want to get involved in?
Well, so, I mean, we're definitely, we're really young filmmakers, you know, so we could decide one thing now and like our minds will be changed, I'm sure, and change again. But as far as like the business goes, we focus on like branded content for businesses. So ideally working on brands and like with people that like we really, really like and really believe in their product and their what they're doing. So, you know, of course, being a young business though, you have to say yes to like almost every opportunity at first. And then like, you need to make money, you know, you need to actually grow the business. And so making branded content is like how we make documentaries, but like for a business. Right. And so it's just like
telling a story.
Right. It's a documentary story. Like it's essentially like a, like for you and for your business. So it would just be the documentary, short documentary form, right, of like a 2 to 3 minute story that's all about Justin and how he started his business from A to Z, right? So you get to know Justin, you get really character focused, and by the end of it, you really understand how you started and why you started your business and why it makes sense to maybe like partner with you or buy your product or be your business partner or something. So that's really what the business is focused on, is like doing that with brands that we really like though. So like, I mean, of course it'd be amazing to be able to, you know, do a documentary for like Pete's Coffee. Like I drink Pete's Coffee all the time. So if we had a story about an executive at Pete's or like, a longtime Pete's Coffee user, stories like that.
We'll get you an action. We'll get you Action Coffee and the founder and do that whole big story. Shameless.
Hey, I mean, we're open to all the new potential business opportunities. So.
No, I love it. That's awesome.
But yeah, so I mean, focusing on branded content is really what in the industry, if you will, would call that. So that's the bread and butter of like what we're going to be about, what we are about, what we've done. I think that's like the best example pieces of things that we've done for businesses. Like there was a 50-year anniversary for this family camp that I used to work at that we did. Actually, I'm wearing the hat right now, coincidentally. Oh, nice. And we went, I worked at this camp for like 4 years. I loved it. Like I seriously, like I grew so much as a person at that camp, and like, man, it's got a part of my heart, you know, like it broke my heart to have to like stop working there. And so, it's all of like making films, you know, like things that you do well. It's like, it's gotta be something that you care about, you know, something that's like kind of like deep in your soul and your heart, like that you can tell a story about because you actually care about it. You know, it's tough to tell a story about something you don't give a shit about, mm-hmm. you know? And so telling stories about stuff that we care about, that's why I'm talking about like brands that we like to use. You know, like I'm doing a little reflexive piece on Kobe Bryant because I was such a huge fan of his, and it's like crushed me that he's not like around anymore, because it's like, what? Like it's super hard to like even understand that that's real still. And so just making stories about things that you care about, and like ideally get paid for that, right? So that can be tough. It's like, I want to do everything for like, sure, it'd be amazing to do a story about like Gibson Les Paul and like interview him and like get, you know, B-roll of him building a freaking G custom guitar, and like that's best case scenario, you know. So like, you know, you gotta do it with business that you can get. But I think for what we've done with the, like that family vacation center, you know, it was all about telling the story about how that has impacted all the people that have been that have worked there, you know. And it's, so it's like it vouches for anyone that would ever want to work there about the impact that it could potentially make on your life. Because mm-hmm. like if we interview the guy who started it, to like the young people that still work there, to the people that are like middle-aged that used to work there, and everyone in between has like said the same shit about how it's really impacted them for the better, you know. So it was just a story that like I understood because it did that for me, and so I was able to tell that story really well as like a cinematographer and an editor, and like my, you know, helping direct it, because I knew where the story would go because I know how it like affected me, you know. I was able to put my shoes in there so easily. So it's just like, it's almost like you could say yes to anything, but like I have to dive into it, you know. So yeah. It's almost like we say yes to almost anything, but like at the same time, no, you know, like the planets have to align in a way, you know. But so, I mean, but once you've actually gotten into film festivals and stuff, then that's a different story, you know, if you have some clout, if you will, in the industry. Yeah. So that's like the other part that like is a monetizable part of our business, but that's something that we're kind of working towards more so right now, which is like producing a documentary in-house, right? That like we are producing from like creating the story from the get, if you will, or working with someone that has this access to a subject, right? A compelling story, and then making that story, going into production and doing what it takes to make it, do it justice and tell it in an interesting, creative, unique, new way, and then trying to sell it, right? So trying to get it distribution. So whether that's through a Netflix for best case scenario, or that's just like free on YouTube, you know, it depends. And there's tons of things in between, of course. And yeah. That's the beauty of actually being, I think, a documentary filmmaker today, is there's tons of different platforms that you could potentially sell to or distribute through to get eyeballs on your work and maybe make some money doing what you love doing. Like my girlfriend was working on this film. She was a cinematographer. It's called Of the Sea, and it was one of her best friend's documentary thesis film, actually. And it recently just got distribution on Amazon Prime.
Awesome.
So now it's like, it did well in its festival circuit, and it's a compelling story that matters and is relevant to today. And now it's on Amazon. So it's like, boom, that's like first piece of clout, right? That like maybe could, like, because my girlfriend was a cinematographer on it. It's like one of her best friends, and they're working on another film that they went to Sri Lanka for. So it's like, you know, it's like, damn, you got a distribution with Amazon, right? That's kind of cool.
Do you guys have any plans to take the footage that you took from the 48 state trip and kind of build something around that?
Yeah. So going back to the road trip, I guess like that was like right before that road trip, we invested into a cinema camera for the first time, a Canon C200. And man, my first year of using that camera, I really learned a lot about how I didn't know how to use that camera. And I'm so much more confident with it now. But to answer, yes, we did do some stuff. The main project that we did was a, like, I don't know how you would, I guess a visual postcard of the United States. And so everywhere we went, the people that we stayed with or that we met that we found interesting, we asked them, you know, what does it mean to be American? And so we have answers from all over the country from people and what they think it means to be an American. And so I've started compiling that together, and it'll be like
timely right now, man.
Yeah. So it's kind of like what, like, I don't know how long it'll be necessarily, but a piece that kind of represents like what it really means to be American based off of the answers from Americans, but like all over, you know, during a time right after, like, you know, this was before, this is in summer of 2019. So it's of course before the COVID-19 shit going down, but this was during, like, I feel like heat of like Trump conversations. Yeah. And so it was very fascinating to like get people's perspectives. And that was like, I really wanted to understand, like, what do people really feel about living in the United States? And what is it really like everywhere, you know? Because you can, like I said, you can get your bubble.
Yeah.
But like, you know how people feel in North Dakota? Do you know how people feel in like Norman, Oklahoma? Like, do you know how the Indian community in Normal, Oklahoma feels about being American?
Yeah.
Like, I think those are all relevant things to be asking.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I you kind of bubbled up something that I was thinking about when I thought about this trip that you took. And it's, I get immersed sometimes into, I don't want to say immersed is maybe the wrong word, but I get fascinated at all the different perspectives and how people, you know, I've spent time out on the West Coast, and living here in Pittsburgh, it's so vastly different. And those are just two of those 48 states, right? And so I think that was the big thing that we as a country missed, and that media missed. And, you know, when Donald Trump was initially running, it's like you have LA and New York where all this media is and all this perspective of, you know, we don't want this. And then it's like, hey, by the way, there are these quote unquote flyover states, or in your case, you know, drive through states, right? But there's real people that live there, and they're just as much a part of this country. I mean, did you get a perspective after making this trip? Are you surprised, shocked? I mean, what's your thought process of the fabric of this country? I mean, are we missing it on what we see on television? Is it vastly different? Is it the same? Or like, what's your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question that I'm glad you asked. I think the main thing that I discovered from doing a road trip like that was we are all so, so similar. Whether, like, sure, where you grew up changes your perspective, maybe on how you view certain things, you know, and how you live your lifestyle. But I would even go and beyond and extend it to, like, you could say this about a lot of countries. Like, a lot of people are the same, even if you speak a different language. Like, you find that people think similarly, you know? Like, why do things become popular? And, like, why are there, you know, like, trends, global trends, you know? It's like, it's because people, whether you're in Los Angeles or you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or Athens, Georgia, or you're in Pennsylvania, or you're in Pittsburgh, you know, like, everybody craves the same thing, which is like literally what you were saying, which is making people go crazy, is like a lack of human interaction, authentic human interaction. We were so surprised at how people were so nice and welcoming and opening arms. Like, in New Orleans, we FaceTimed, like, so we posted on a Facebook group, a two-lane Facebook group, saying, hey, we're this couple that's doing this road trip to all 48 of the contiguous United States, and we're coming through New Orleans tonight. We want to stay with someone. Can we stay with someone? And, like, we heard about that through a friend, that Facebook page. And we had, like, two people that we were basically interviewing for the position, you know? And it was, like, we FaceTimed with this guy, Joe, and we ended up staying with him. And it was, like, we stayed at a stranger's house in the middle of New Orleans that had this beautiful Great Dane puppy, and this guy ended up being, you know, becoming a good friend. And he's like, was an amazing experience. And it's like, why would he do that? And it's because, like, people like people. People want to be entertained. They want to enjoy their life. They want to, like, laugh. They want to have a friend. You know, everyone wants that. everyone wants to be wanted some way or another, you know, whether that you admit that to yourself or not, you think you're a recluse or whatever, like everybody wants to like feel valuable and feel wanted somehow or thought of, like, you know, like old people, right? Like they, why do they want you to call? It's because like they're too physically inactive to be able to go to the bar with their buds anymore. And, or like, you know, where they don't give a shit about certain things anymore, you know, they don't have the energy to like go do a bunch of stuff, but they want to talk to people still that they care about. That's why they want their grandchildren to call them, because they just crave the attention too. Everyone wants to feel wanted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so everywhere we went, people were like surprisingly open. And we discovered that's just because everyone is going through the same, like, oh man, I'm a little down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets depressed. Everyone, even like the happiest fuckers, they get depressed, you know?
Yep.
Everyone wants human affection and attention, and that's it. And that's like, depends how you want to get that or how you give it, but.
Yeah. No, it's good to hear you say that. I think I actually agree. You know, I think we're a lot closer than we realize. I do think we have the tendency to be able to separate quickly, but I think at the end of the day, when things get tough, you know, I don't know where I heard it, but somebody once told me, I'd never wish for 9/11 again, but I would wish for 9/12. You know, kind of more the sentiment that how this country was and how people treated each other after such a horrible thing, we kind of found that commonality amongst each other of who we are as people. And that always stuck with me. And I've been thinking about that quote a lot as this has happened. And, you know, there's days where I turn on the TV and I'm really encouraged. I'm encouraged having a conversation like this with you, you know. Yeah. And there's days where, you know, you can turn on the wrong channel at the wrong time and you hear some shit and you're like, man, we're doomed. But did you watch Joe Exotic and The Tiger King? And what was your perspective on that documentary?
Yeah, no. Super quickly before I answer your question about Tiger King.
Yes.
The Kobe passing away, actually, I felt like a really similar thing. I was very little when 9/11 happened, so I don't feel the emotion that the day after had, honestly. I don't remember it, you know? But for me, like, I feel like Kobe passing away was like, I took his jersey off the wall. Like, I never wore that really, ever. Like, cause it's like an authentic jersey that I like one day wanted him to sign or some shit. And like, I decided, like, I heard he passed away. I just like took it off my wall and I went on my usual loop around the neighborhood. But I like, you know, I went ham, you know, like Kobe fucking pushed me on that run, you know? And like, I had a good handful of people like honk at me while I was on that run. And like, man, it's just like crazy how much more motivated and inspired I've felt since he passed away, even though that's like, you think about like, fuck man, I idolized him a lot in a lot of ways, and respected him in how he lived his life, not necessarily just as a basketball player, but it was like, man, it sucks that it took him to die to make me realize that, like, oh, maybe I actually, you know, admitting to myself that maybe I do have a natural tendency to want to slack off. But like, it's funny that I would say that, because I think like to a certain group of people, I feel like I have a really amazing work ethic. And, but like, there's absolutely places where I'm like, man, I could have worked harder at basketball in high school. You know, like I totally could have played D1 ball, but like, I didn't put in those extra fucking hours necessarily. I didn't go Mamba mode in high school, because like, that's fine if I didn't, because I didn't realize the impact I could maybe have on people at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just so oblivious to like being happy, which is good. But
you can take that mentality into other, I think the thing that I've taken is, especially after he left basketball, that he took that same mentality into his ventures outside of that, which for 100%. Me, like, I had an appreciation for Kobe that kind of came late in his career and after he retired. I was always a big MJ fan, and the comparison between the two of them, and quite honestly, the similarities between them almost kind of like bothered me, right? Yeah. Not to a hatred, but I was just like, yeah, okay. I I just didn't want to admit how close to the guy that I grew up idolizing in a basketball sense that Kobe really was. And seeing him step away from basketball, and quite honestly, you know, Jordan hasn't, from my perspective, he didn't really do the things that Kobe did after Ball. You know, he's a little different, and I respected that. I was kind of like the guy that I idolized on the court with Jordan. It's like I wish that he would have had the same path maybe, or the way that Kobe handled it. I really kind of vibed with that and really started to follow his career. And
that's funny. We'll this podcast will be way too long if we go down the Michael Kobe debate. You hit the nail on the head when you said that, like, you know, Kobe inspiring and being that kind of person off the court. Like, I think it's sad to say, but I think him passing away actually will have like a positive impact, already has, on the world, like how people view their friendships. You know, I think people hug their family a little bit tighter, were a little bit more grateful for just like coming home at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of that 9/12 feel, if you will, like you were saying. And so for me, I feel like it was an interestingly sad motivator that like has inspired me in a lot of ways. But you know, it just makes you think about things. Like, it's like, damn, why do good people die? I think a lot of people ask that question, like, why do good people die?
Yeah.
But I actually felt like during my reflection about Kobe dying, like, I feel like I'm happy with an answer that I've come up with for myself, which is that, like, when bad people die, people cheer, right? Like, really bad people. Like, when we heard Osama bin Laden got taken out, we're like, fuck yeah, America. But, like, did that feed your soul, really? Like, not really.
No, it was like on to the next news cycle, right?
Yeah, you're on to your turkey sandwich. And when like people you've never heard of die, or that you weren't close to die, like you don't really feel anything. People that didn't make a big impact die, like people aren't, like the people close to them are sad, but like that's because they made an impact on them, you know? But good people die because it actually impacts even bad people, if you will, like maybe people rather that choose to be, make more bad decisions than not.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way. But like, you know, I think when good people die, it makes you think, because you're like, fuck man, this guy was like, he inspired so many people and like,
doesn't seem real.
I'm a piece of shit. I didn't even like go to practice yesterday. You know, at least I could do is like hug my mom, be a little bit nicer to her.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe it'll, you know, and if it does inspire people to work harder, which I think it absolutely has, that also changes people for the better in a good way or a positive way, you know, and makes them treat other people a little bit better because it gives you more perspective if you're willing to work hard. So,
yeah. No,
it sucks to say, but I think him dying actually is impacting the world in a really, really positive way.
Yeah. Now, without going down a whole tirade. Yeah. Well, before. Without going down a whole tirade, we'll save it for part two sometime. But I think, like, how you view life in general, too, right? Like, if I would have been 10 years younger, Kobe dying would have been a lot more final. It would have been painful in a different light for me. But I almost look at it and think, like, this isn't the end. And not even in a religious standpoint, you know what I mean? Like, regardless of what your religion is, I believe we know so little about what lies ahead of us. And to your point, why do good people die? I don't think it's a coincidence that things like that happen, impact us so heavily at times when we probably need the perspective most. And when somebody who can accomplish so much on earth can almost accomplish more in passing, it seems like it fits the right puzzle piece. You don't know why. Why is the puzzle piece shaped that way? Why is it the one that fits here? But I don't know. I'm becoming more and more unlikely to challenge those types of things. And I just accept it as it's part of whatever is to be. And I can focus my energy on some other shit, like maybe taking some of what I saw and injecting it into my own daily routine to make myself better. So maybe I can someday have the same type of impact on others in, you know, my finality. So I don't know.
Yeah, dude, I've gone on that note when I took that jersey and I went on that run. I've gone on a run every single day. It's been like over 3 months now.
That's awesome.
So And I started hitting the gym hard too, but then COVID hit. So that was like, I bought the membership literally like March 1st and then I was fucked.
Yeah. No, okay, so
Tiger King?
Yes, please tell me you saw it, right? You did watch it.
Yes, of course. So being overrated? A documentary filmmaker, of course I'm a young documentary filmmaker, but I'm an opinionated one. I loved it, first of all. Let's just get that straight. It is, first of all, undoubtedly the most watched, viewed, and most popular documentary series of all time. Mm-hmm. I think that is a fact. And so that's just one thing, right? So you gotta just respect the game. Like, it did it, right? Two, of course, you could say circumstantially, like, if other documentaries were under that type of situation, maybe it would have done that well too, but they weren't, so tough shit.
Perfect storm.
Right. So it's just like the planets aligned, it won, it did it. But the reason it was so popular at the time when this was all happening, when we were locked in our rooms, like there was tons of other stuff on Netflix we could have binged and other new stuff that came out, but the reason we watched that was because it was actually so good, and it was because it was such crazy access to such like one, like it was a real story, but it seemed like a made up story, you know, but it was a real story about real people, again, in parts of the countries of the country that like maybe the majority is not very familiar with or comfortable with. And it's just like, I was like, of course this is what's popular. Because I get, like, literally my uncles, my dad's the youngest of seven, so there's four brothers, and they do what's called, like, they used to do it every year, but it's called Carnage. And they literally just take Tannerite and they, like, blow up, like, you know, a microwave oven and, like, an old television and, like.
So hold on. I gotta inject here because, like, growing up in Bradford, Pennsylvania, northwestern PA, it's like when I was 6 or 7 years old, my dad had a car. It was called an Eagle. I don't know if you ever heard of an Eagle. This thing looked like a brown turd. It was like his work beater. And he's like, hey. So he had a partner. They owned an auto parts and glass store in northwestern PA called Keystone. And his partner was a big time gun guy, like preparing for the apocalypse, cornmeal vacuum sealed in his basement, like ready for the world to end, two-way radio, like hold on. Like right now, this guy's standing on top of his house saying, I fucking told you all this was happening. Great. But he had all these friends that were really big into guns, and they're like, you're done with this car. I think he like blew the head gasket out of it. They took it up on top of the hill on somebody's private property. And when I say there's 50 to 100 guys with everything from small handguns to, you know, a 50 cal, I mean, these guys were up there with military style machine guns, AK-47s. And I'm like a 6-year-old kid with giant headphones on. And they just lit this car up for 25, 30 minutes, just everybody blowing holes in it. And then they would kind of take a pause and everybody walked up and kind of looked at the damage and then they would back away and they let it in again. And I remember they shot the gas tank with something large and it blew the car up and the hood ended up in an oak tree, like 30 feet up in the air from this thing exploding. But yeah. I say all that because people in Bradford will know, minus the Tigers, Tiger King is very much that type of people.
And you know what's funny is like you say that, it's funny you say that about like your area there. I think there's a lot of states actually around the United States that can relate to that, like Oklahoma, obviously, because that's where it went down. Florida, parts of Pennsylvania, Northern California, Texas, like anywhere, like Louisiana, like damn, like anywhere else in the South, right? Like you hit Tennessee, Alabama, anywhere, I feel like you're gonna get it, and that's why it was so understood in the United States, because like
it's relatable, yeah,
and it was real. That's why it was so. It's like it seemed fake, but it was real, you know. Plus the aspect of it being about like tigers, right? Like this very like magnificent, beastly creature too. So everyone loves the animal rights conversation too, so it's like a trending topic on top of it being like this unfathomably real situation.
Is there one thing right now, obviously it could change, but is there one thing, if you could make one documentary right now that you really...
I guess what I'm working on, like, right now, then, to answer that, is, like, I'm working on a reflexive piece about Kobe mm-hmm. and, like, what he meant to me and how he impacted me. So I've started, like, my proposal or treatment for that, if you will, and, like, did, like, one, like, location scout and, like, I guess we, like, sort of started production when we went, we, like, visited all of his murals. But so I'm working on a reflexive piece about Kobe. I'm working on a documentary, a short documentary about an artist. So it's, like, the first collaborative project my girlfriend and I are working on, where, at least for me. So we're, this other girl is directing it, and it's a piece all about this guy who, like, jumps on a trampoline and paints artwork up on, like, a backboard-sized canvas 10 feet up in the air. And so it's, like, a performance art. And, of course, there's, like, the art piece that comes out of it. But so that is a really interesting piece that's all about being playful as an adult, giving yourself permission to play. And he's just, like, a really amazingly eloquent speaker and passionate and, like, inspiring guy, in my opinion. So I'm working on that. Those are the main two pieces that I'm working on. It's funny, on the road trip, we really wanted to make a documentary series all about, called The State of Cannabis, where we were going to, like, cover a story about essentially what the current state of, like, cannabis legality is like in the United States, depending on, like, you know, each story or episode would be, like, a different state, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, I have so many ideas of shit, like, documentaries that I've written down that I want to do that I think I may have access to subjects for, right? But it's just a matter of time. Okay, like, make, you got to write it down. It's just like a business plan for every documentary. Every documentary is a new business, you know? So you got to write it down. You got to nourish it. You got to massage it. You got to ask people for feedback. And then finally, once you got your ducks in a line, then, like, you go to talk to, you know, make, you know, people to join your team, if you will, and, like, make it and then, like, invest in it, you know? So I'm super new to the documentary world, but, like, I'm really passionate about it and I want to help people in it and I want to tell, like, amazing stories. And so I'm going to start with, like, shit that I care about, right? So just start with Kobe. I think it'll be a compelling piece because, like, I'm a big fat crybaby about my Kobe shit right now. And but, like, I got to get it out somehow, and I think it'll be a compelling story.
I'm really excited to see what comes out of that, because I've been following, obviously, you know, we've on social media and whatnot. I've seen some of the stuff that you've posted recently, and I know that you've got something special coming. So very excited. We'll have to do this again as you kind of get further down that journey and, you know, kind of share with people.
Just getting started, so we got plenty of time.
Excellent. So social media, at Unreal Stories on IG.
Yeah, so that's at Unreal Stories, and Unreal is UNREEL. I guess my personal Instagram is at Matt Meredith, MEREDITH, I guess. I'm really proud that I have that at Matt Meredith, by the way, because there's tons of Matthew Meredith in the world. And then if you're interested in cannabis, then follow at Cottonmouth Media for your cannabis lifestyle shit.
Which is where you and I first crossed paths. You're still chugging away.
The channel is doing better than it was.
Excellent. Now we need to catch up and have more of a cannabis specific conversation. I figured we'd stick to documentary because I've been so fascinated with what you're doing. It takes a lot of courage, to your point. We chatted offline, you know, it would have been very easy for you to take a paycheck and, you know, just kind of cash in on the corporate route with the training you have, especially, you know, a lot of the experiences that you bring to the table. But the fact that you follow your passion is a big reason that I wanted to talk with you. I'm so pumped that this was the first dialogue. It's special to me, you know, and I know the folks that will be listening to this will get a kick out of your story. And yeah, man, it's great catching up. I really do appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it as well. And you just reminded me, like, full circle for our podcast, like, the most value that you can give to people, you know, like, everybody wants to be wanted, you know, is that's why it's time. So when you can give people time, that's just the most valuable thing, because money and things only go so far and you only live once, right? So if you're willing to spend your time with other people, that says a lot about how you feel about that person, I think. So
most definitely, brother. Well, I'll have a drink for you. I'll probably have a puff later here too. And it was good catching up. Pleasure to talk with you, and tell the lady and the missus that I said hello. And I'll let you know next time I'm in California, but keep in touch and let me know how everything's going.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'll tell Leia you said hello, and stay safe, and enjoy your son and your family.
Thank you very much, buddy. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you.
All right. Peace, brother.